UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
All right, I got a lot of thoughts, and I'll be happy to share them with you, but we also have a lot of components to the show today, so I don't want to get into it too deep and then have to interrupt it and then pick it up, but we'll go where we go. Cal is going to speak to the assembled masses in about 10 minutes or so from now, I'm going to think. I think that's about right. And then we'll have a good long window to yabber at you. And then Chris Mack is going to yabber at you as well. That'll be about 1:15 in the next hour. And then Tim Sullivan's going to join us in the two. And, you know, a lot of people is like, oh, you're going to have him on your show today? I want to get into that in some detail because we get into a little back and forth on Twitter. But it's beyond just him. I mean, it wasn't about him. It was my reaction to kind of what he was alluding to that more than him. I mean, there are people, listen, I'll get into it in some degree right now because we have a good 10-minute window. I think I can do some justice to it, and then I'm sure you'll respond, and then I'll get some texts, and we'll get those in the latter part of the hour after Cal. He sent a tweet out that some board member, some Louisville board of trustee member, I guess, I don't know. He doesn't say who it is. I don't know who it is. I have no suspicions who it is. To be honest with you, I don't care who it is, said – that's along the lines of, well, I wish they had gotten Kenny Payne instead, or we didn't even do a proper coaching search, expressing displeasure about Mac. And then Chris's Tim's term was the honeymoon over. And I took issue with that for a couple of reasons. Not that you can't have a different opinion. It's not like, well, here's my opinion, so if you don't agree with it, which is how a lot of people argue nowadays, well, then you're an idiot. No, that's not the point even at all. And it's also not even with Tim, because that's what it turned into. Some people, oh, Tim is this, Tim is that. It's not even that. I'll get to that in a bit as well. It's a ridiculous take because there's no merit to it on anything of substance. If every time a team loses – you wanted to go find one person and keep going and find a person of some prominence that would say the guy's an idiot, doesn't know what he's doing. Trust me, you'll not have any problem. In the history of sports, if the Packers lost a game, there'd be somebody who'd think Vince Lombardi was terrible. It's the nature of sports. Okay, so that is not a story. What I took issue with was the thought that, well, the honeymoon's over, and, you know, is there some concern, like some questioning now about how they wound up with Chris Mack. When here's how I look at it, and this sometimes drives people crazy because they want the color analyst to be a glorified fan, and I am rooting for Louisville. I am, just the way Mike Pratt is rooting for Kentucky, as well he should be. But one of the things we try and do on Fast Break Friday, and I try and do each day, is when somebody open the microphone, I try and give you the analyst's look at it. That's what I'm doing, and I'm just telling you. I am telling you. This is not me, like, oh, you know, well, I would play Joe Smith. I'd play Tom Jones. No, it's not a matter of opinion. I'm telling you factually. I talk on a somewhat regular basis with the people that are in the knowledgeable about basketball, former outstanding players, former coaches, and I'm telling you there is not a shred of credibility to that take among national analysts. Nobody. Nobody looking at this is saying, huh, how'd they wind up with that guy? That's not a very good search. They are all saying, wow, what a job this guy's done coming into what potentially was a complete mess and having an NCAA tournament team his first year, getting to the number one ranking his second year, and having what's regarded as a good recruiting class, this guy is A-OK. That's how they all feel. You don't have to like it. You don't have to agree with it. I'm not trying to persuade you to agree with it. I'm notifying you. I'm telling you that's the thought. So there's no merit on that regard. Okay, well, then the other way to look at it is, well, and I think this, quite frankly, this sometimes is of less value. It is of some value is, oh, well, is there a groundswell of people that are saying, oh, how do we wind up with this guy? Could you go run around and find a smattering of people that are looking for one specific guy, for Kenny Payne, for example? Sure you could. I do this every day. I sit here with a text line 8 feet from where I'm sitting. I know what people are saying. I know what they're thinking. There's no meat on the bone there. Are the people unhappy they lost to Kentucky? Of course they are. Are the people sad they lost 2 games in a row? Sure they are. But is there a groundswell of thought that somehow this was a flawed search and they got the wrong guy? Sorry, there's no meat on that bone either. If there were, I would tell you that. Well, I'll give you a perfect example. You have an opinion, I have an opinion. When Tom Jurich was on his way out, that was a difference of opinion. There were people texting the show saying, how can you get rid of this guy? He's been spectacular. He got us in the ACC. And then there were other people saying, oh, it's time for a change. We got to go in a different direction. That's a bona fide that difference of opinion. That is a mainstream fan base that had a strong opinion about one way or another to go. There is no such debate, none. I'm notifying you as somebody who gets these texts and tweets and listens and has people call the show. There is no groundswell of thought for that. So if there's no groundswell of support from the fan base and knowledgeable basketball people, I'm reporting to you what the perception is nationally, because the perception nationally about Jurich was maybe it's time to go. Maybe there's a mess going on there. Louisville's got some problems. There were some people who said the other thing. No, he's done a great job. Why are you blaming him? I'm reporting to you that text, that tweet he sent out, was I was very surprised because it was of no merit. It was of no merit on any objective basis. There was no groundswell of community thought here that, boy, oh, boy, we got buyer's regret now. Don't see that at all. And there's certainly no at all from people in the know nationally looking at this job saying, oh, my God, what they wind up with that guy for? They're all saying, what a job this guy's done. We had Paul Biancardi on saying they'll be lucky if they have, you know, he wasn't being nasty. He's not an anti-Louisville guy. He was just saying he does recruiting for a living. He was saying they'll be lucky if they get good recruiting classes within 4 or 5 years. That thing's a mess right now. Nobody's going to sign there. And boom, they put a very good recruiting class together. So there's no substance to that at all. And I was surprised because Tim, to me, an old school reporter, and I say that in the most complimentary of ways, which is that's exactly what they don't do. They don't get one shred and then just go blab it out there, unless you maybe want people talking about you. Like you accomplished that, I guess. But I'm surprised. An old school reporter would say, really? Let me get on that. Let me see. This board member said that. And if he took 10 seconds like I did, he'd find out there's not. He called Dick Vitale sitting right there. Dick, you hearing this from anybody? No. Seth Greenberg? No. Jay Billis? No. Any of the other analysts? No. Bill Raftery? No. The play-by-play guys? No. Then give me other analysts. No, no, no. Then none of them. Okay, fan base. Generally, after people say, "I'm sorry, we lost to Kentucky." That's why that game annoys the spit out of me. Because I say this all the time on the show: don't let sports make you stupid. And we do. We let that one game make us stupid collectively. I'm sure you're pissed off. I get it. Especially, and I've said this before, because now they kicked Louisville's butt in football this year. And that used to be the one place, all right, well, you know, you may get us in basketball now and again, but we're dominating with football. Well, now they won handily in football. So now this year the tables were turned. Oh, yeah, look at us. We're in the top 5. You're barely in the top 20. This is our year. And then they go lose. And so now all of a sudden people are pissed off. They lost in overtime. Overtime games are decided by one single factor more than any other: luck. It was a tie, essentially. So if you're going to lose your mind over that, then I don't know what I can tell you. And as for Florida State, if I'm an analyst and I'm not doing Louisville's games, I'm just an ESPN analyst, I walk in and say, what every analyst I've talked to has said, boy, Florida State's pretty good. They got a good team. They're really big. They're really athletic. The one thing they don't do on a consistent basis is shoot. But boy, when they shoot it, they're going to be tough to beat. What'd they do here Saturday? Shot the spit out of it. So guess what? They're really good.
They're the winningest program in this league over 10 years behind Duke and Carolina, a fact. Their head coach is only one of six guys to win 150 or more ACC games, a fact. You don't associate Florida State with basketball in your mind. That's your business. That's fine. Again, I'm not telling you, hey, now you have to get out there and tell everybody what a great basketball program it is, but I'm giving you the analysis that objective people looking at it would say, which is they lost to a really good team who played really well. So there's no meat. I'm sorry. There's just no meat on the bone with what that started this whole discussion of. One guy, one boy, who, I don't know, is he a basketball guy? I don't even know who the hell he is. You know, it's not hard. I'm sure when the job came open, maybe, you know, Chris Mack wasn't the guy that you were hoping gets it. That's not, he wouldn't even be offended at that if you told him that, because that's the nature of the beast. We all go through that. When the job opens, I want this guy, I want that guy, I want Scotty Davenport, I want the Red Auerbach to come back from the grave, I want whoever, you want somebody. That's how people look at it. That's the way it is all the time. It's okay. But then you look at it objectively when they say, this is our guy, and you say, is that a good choice? And most basketball people said, yeah, really good choice. And having watched the guy up close, I've gone to practice, I said, well, yeah, he's a good teacher. He teaches the game. And watching what they did on the floor, they're really good. What I think, if you want to break down this season, is they get off to a really good start. He's a very fine coach. He ran a bunch of actions and sets that were different from last year, so people weren't necessarily prepared for it. Now they're preparing, and that's how a season goes. It's not a knock on coaching. Now the next step is, will Louisville counter their counters? We'll find out. That's how the season's going. We'll find out. That's what basketball is. But so if you had a guy that you said, gee, I was hoping this guy got the job, I'm not debating that. I'm not debating there were other people. I'm not debating he's the only guy who could do the job. There's no job in America. There's only one guy who could do it. There's a lot of good basketball coaches out there. But what I'm debating was the substance of the tweet, which was that somehow the honeymoon's over and that there's this groundswell of discussion. There's not. There's not on the from a national standpoint, and there's not from the vast majority of the fan base. It just isn't. I don't know what I can tell you. Like I said, man, no matter how much you may wish 2 and 2 equals 5, that's fine, but it equals 4. And I'm here telling you, I'm not persuading you that you should feel this way. I'm just telling you my reaction was to the tweet. And if it was of some surprise, it was because old school reporters didn't usually do that. Get one comment and then run with it. Unless it was, you know, he used the analogy. He said, what about John Schnatter? What he said, A, wasn't anonymous. John Schnatter said it. He said it on the record. Or he said it and we knew who we could attribute it to. And B, is this a basketball guy? I don't care how much money whoever it is said it. Is it a real basketball guy? If it is, great, then I'd like to hear why he said that. What is it he, you know, because here's the other thing that makes it so grossly unfair. Most of you know I have such great affection for Rick Pitino, which I do. But the one thing, and I'm not going to pretty this up, I was always dismayed that whenever he took a job, he seemed to almost go out of his way not to embrace the people who were in the program in the past. He did that at Kentucky. He did it with the Celtics. And he did it when he was here. And this guy has come in, and Chris has, he's been doing virtual gymnastics to try and include everybody, inviting him to his home. And Susan Sweeney Crum, Denny's wife, has been just singing his praises about how welcome he's made Denny feel and how respectful he's been, how respectful he is of the history of the program. So I can understand if you were a little mad, like, what do we bring this guy in here for? He doesn't appreciate our history. Yes, he does. He does more than the guy was here. And again, not making it up. You don't have to agree with it, but go look on Facebook, look on Twitter, look at these people, the pictures, the discussion, the people. Perrin went to his house. Susan has pictures of him with Denny, and how she has 3 or 4 or 5 different ones about how appreciative she is that he's reached out to Denny and his ex-players. So it doesn't make any sense. There's no merit to it. Now, are you saying, this is the problem when you do this. Oh, you're a coach apologist. No, I'm not. You're a honk. No, I'm not that either. If you've listened, I'm trying to give you an objective, my opinion. Even if you think that's true, I defy you to find a national landscape of people that are saying this guy is, could you find one guy out there saying it? Probably, but I'm just telling you. Ask Billis, ask Greenberg, ask Dickie V, ask Raff, ask any of the, ask, oh my God, I'm getting older, I can't remember his name. The other analyst who's been with the ACC now, Dan Bonner, ask him. They stop, just stop. It's ridiculous. So, and now, are you saying that you can't second guess or question coaches' moves? Of course you can. That's what goes on in every sport. Whatever a guy does, he puts this guy in, you want to know why he didn't put that guy in. He played man here, you want to know why he didn't play zone. He played zone, you want to know why he didn't play man. That's fine. You can feel whatever you want to. But what I'm suggesting to you is I've seen nothing in there that looks like it's just a horrible, egregious, oh, my God, why? Like, there's no sense to doing that. Why would you do that? I mean, you know, I'm trying to find some stupid analogy, like, I don't know, down a point. This is a good analogy that because nobody in their right mind would do this. Guy's got a free throw. The team is down 1 point, and you tell the guy deliberately miss it. Maybe we can get the rebound and win the game. Okay, and then you'd say, well, that's just complete, you know, being an ignoramus. There's nothing like that. He just has a way he approaches the game, the way he's trying to coach it and play it. It makes sense, and he does a good job teaching it. And so if you have a difference of opinion, why didn't he play that guy? Why didn't he play this guy? I understand what he's trying to do and how he's trying to do it. I watch him teach it. It makes sense. So that part of it proves nothing. It proves nothing other than if they took you from your job selling widgets or being an accountant or selling insurance and gave you the team, you would play this defense or play that guy. Fine, great. Proves nothing. You know, it does remind me when guys get too strident, though. I get texts from guys, why are you like just so disdainful? You know, okay, look, is there another way you can do it? Of course there are. If you took 10 coaches, 10 all great coaches, find coaches that are, you know, Hall of Fame coaches and put them in here, they would have 10 different ways of doing things probably because that's the nature of the business. That's what coaching is. But it doesn't mean that way's wrong. Maybe you would choose to do a different way, whatever. That's your business. But it doesn't prove anything. It reminds me of, I mentioned this before, Tony La Russa. One day I got to spend a whole day with him. I had to speak at a thing in Virginia. I hope they still do it because it's a great day. They have a sports organization there, the Norfolk or Virginia Beach. I can't remember which one it is. Sports Club. And I guess we have one here, too. And no disrespect to the one here, but the one down there, is at least at that time, it's a lot of years ago now, it was gigantic. I mean, it was like they had a banquet the last part of the day. It was a banquet with like 600 members or something like that. They started, though, you had breakfast. They had breakfast. Some of the people come to breakfast, and they had a speaker at that. And then at lunch, they had a luncheon, and each of them got bigger. Breakfast was like 130 people. Lunch was like 250 people. Dinner was like 650 people. And Lefty Driesell spoke at breakfast. I can't remember who spoke at lunch. And then La Russa spoke at dinner. And I emceed the day. I think I emceed at lunch and at dinner. I don't know if I had anything to do at breakfast. But my point is, there's nothing for you to do, basically. You're just waiting to go from one event to the next. And so we spent a lot of time hanging out. We just hung out. And we were talking. And, by this point I was out of coaching. I was doing radio. And he said the one thing, speaking on behalf of a lot of coaches, but it stuck with me because I made sense. He said the only thing that's ever bothered him is, here he is, and this is a very bright man. The guy's got his law degree. He played in the major leagues. He knows what he's doing. And he would say, you know, he'd listen to a radio show. And the guy'd come on and be absolutely convinced that La Russa should have done this or that. Here's the answer to the team. Do this and do that. And then they go to commercial break, and then the guy come back and tell what the guy who's coaching the Rams should be doing, what the hell he's doing wrong. The Rams were still playing in St. Louis at that time. What he's doing wrong. And he thought to himself, wow, this is interesting. Here's a guy who knows more about running my team and the Rams and SLU, the basketball team, and he's doing it just on the side while he's trying to do his radio job. This is all I do. I'm not worried about running the football team. It's all I do. And yet, he has all the answers. It's that simple. And I got to thinking, well, you know, you're right. He's calling us out, but he's right. You can have an opinion, and you can say, well, I'd like to see him do this, but to state it so matter-of-factly, just common sense would say, don't you think it's a little odd? I don't know what you do for a living, but if I showed up at your work tomorrow thinking I know more about your job than what you're doing, your reaction, I hope, would be, what an ass hat this guy is. Okay? Well, I mean, so that's the truth. So that's the point. I can have an opinion. Nobody can stop you from having an opinion. And sometimes you can't argue if it's different ways to coach a team. I would play this guy instead of that guy. Fine, whatever. But it doesn't give any credence to anything on the docket there. So it was ridiculous. It was sports making us stupid. And I can't stand when sports makes you stupid. The Florida State's good and played really, really well. I mean, that's the way it is. Louisville wasn't great. They've got some things they're working through. They definitely are. He's adjusting lineups. People, you wanted to see David Johnson play more. He played more, and he played fairly well. Made some silly mistakes. But Chris, I think, has made the deal with himself. I'm going to have to let him play through those because we're going to need him. Good. If you wanted him to play, then you should be happy about that. But then you're going to have to live with him playing through mistakes. And if you say, well, why didn't he play him earlier? Were you at practice in his preseason? Did you go to all those practices? Probably not. So, you know, he was playing guys that he thought were ready, and for whatever reason, you know, he wasn't quite ready. And I can tell you probably one of the reasons when I watched him, he ran at a guy who faked a shot at him the other day, and the guy put it to the floor, made a 10-foot jumper. That's a bozo no-no in this program. You don't leave your feet for jump shooters until they actually leave the floor. That's why they work, get there before the game, watch him do the chop-chop drill, the closeout drill. So that's why. You can say, well, I wouldn't be that important to me if I were running a team. Fine, great. You're not running the team. He's running the team. It is that important, and he expects all the guys to do it. And if they don't, they don't play. So, I mean, that's the whole point of this thing. Just craziness. Don't let sports make you stupid. You can be disappointed. Fine. The Kentucky game sticking in your craw. Got it. But don't let it make you stupid. Are they going to be great? I don't know. Hey, listen, now I'm not going to pat myself on the back, but I'm going to tell you, I told you this all summer. I'm tired of 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, dot, 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 dot. Until they get here and play, you don't know. Oh, they're going to be great because all these freshmen are great. They may be great. My brother had two players who, as freshmen, hardly got off the bench, and they both went on to be NBA longtime players. I think they were both all-stars. Tom Gugliotta and Vinny Del Negro didn't see a daylight as freshmen. Now you can say, well, why aren't they recruiting one-and-dones? Fine, again, whatever, make you happy to bitch and moan, knock yourself out. But A, there's not that many. B, it's the way you're building a program here, you know, he's not doing it that way. Maybe is it by choice? Maybe not. Maybe he's trying to get one and done. He just didn't get them. I don't know. But if you're going to fault him for that, then you better fault 353 of the 355 Division I teams, because it's only really two guys that are getting them with any consistency. Maybe three, maybe Kansas too. You know, that's the way it is. So you build in a program. And these guys, I think they can be good players. I think David Johnson can be a good player. I think Samuel will. They're lost a little bit. Let them develop, for God's sake. They're people. Are you great the first day on your job? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's letting sports make you stupid. You want to be disappointed? Fine.
To answer your question, no, I was not good. I'm not even good at the 100th day of my job.
I mean, it's just... And listen, it's not anti-Kenny Payne, if you're a UK fan. Kenny's a fine coach and a very good man. It's not about, oh, how in the world could you consider hiring him? If he wants a head coaching job, I hope he gets one in the next year or two. But it's not that. It's just that the whole thing, it's amazing how it got legs. It shouldn't have gotten legs. It was the basketball equivalent of the world is flat. I mean, I just, you know, really? We wasted time talking about that? It's just... Very, very. It was very strange to me. Is Cal talking, or we're not taking him live, or what? Give me an update.
Right now, it's way too hot. Joel Justice is up. You want to listen to that?
He's
talking right now.
Joel Justice is talking.
Yes.
Why is Cal not going to talk?
Cal will probably talk eventually. I don't know. Joel's just taking questions. I'm staring at him right now.
All right. Well, is Cal coming on afterwards? Is that the deal?
I think so.
All right. Well, let's wait till Cal.
Okay.
No disrespect to Mr. the fine song stylings of Mr.
I mean,
Justice.
I had to run to the. That's why I ran to the other room. I was like, Pat, who is this individual? I don't know him. He's not Cal. And Pat told me, and then everybody was shocked by it. So, yeah.
As fans, we are not seeing this team getting better. Okay, well, that's what you see. I don't see it that way, but that's fine. We'll see. I see them playing a much more difficult schedule and a much more detailed scouting report, because people now know who they are a little bit. And if you're going to get frustrated if you don't think Louisville can make counter adjustments. Maybe they won't. I'll tell you what else. He's trying to do something. People, oh, this defense, oh, I hear about the back line. They didn't play like Virginia. You know one of the reasons they don't play like Virginia? Because Chris wants to run. Tony doesn't want to run. So Tony's always going to give up 50 points a game because there's only going to be like 7 possessions in the whole game. And it works for him. Chris doesn't want to do that. I think he correctly thinks he's going to have a hell of a time trying to recruit. And, you know, Tony managed to get it done there. He's identified the right kind of kids, and they won a national championship, and that'll help you get players, and he's got guys to the pros, so he's made it work. But I'll tell you what, he is navigating a very difficult minefield. I don't think Chris wants to try and navigate that minefield. So he thinks playing the pack line is the best way to defend, but he doesn't think it's the best way to play offense at a snail's pace. So, and in fact, Florida State, and I asked him in the post game, you heard it if you listen to the post game show, that
It looked like he made two concerted efforts this game. One was to play the youngsters more, and two was to run. And he said, well, yes, we did, because they were like Louisville was like 300th in the country in pace. I'm sure he doesn't want to be there. And he said, not only that, Florida State is so long in the half court, and they're so good defensively, we thought our best chance to score was to push the ball up the floor and get shots before they could set up. Great, fine, understandable, good, understandable strategy. But my point is, what he's trying to do is harder, because you're trying to get guys to run and then come back and play, you know, pack line, discipline, positional defense, not easy. You're going from playing like a wild banshee at one end to playing like a librarian at the other. It's not easy to do. And yesterday, Saturday, they didn't do especially well because, frankly, Florida State was really good. If I weren't, these are two observations. Now, I'll play fan, okay? Now I'm not playing analyst. I'm playing fan. I thought he gave up on the zone too soon. I thought the zone bothered him. And just because they got a couple of shots off it, you can tell he doesn't have much of a commitment to the zone. Because as soon as they got a couple of baskets, he got right out of it because he really believes that much in the man-to-man. And that's fine. Again, that's how he's wired. I would have thought, okay, let's see, how do we adjust now? They ran a guy to the high post. What counter adjustment can we make? Because I didn't think Florida State looked nearly as comfortable against the zone. Just my opinion. You can say, I don't agree with that. Great. Opinions. That's why you watch. The other thing, here's the only other thing that I'm troubled by. But I get it. But I understand it. And I, as I always do, I try and put myself in their coach's shoes and tell you why he's saying what he's saying. I think that's much more valuable to you than me pontificating about, here's what I would do, or here's what Joe the Butcher told me he'd do on the way to work today. But he said that the way they overplay, that's the scouting report on Louisville right now. You must have figured that out. The scouting report is jump in the half court and get up in everybody's jock. Get up close on everybody. Dare them to beat you on the dribble. They don't have a lot of guys who can do that. Florida State does that anyway because they don't mind. You want to take it to the basket? Fine. We got four guys that are big enough to invade some small foreign countries back there. We're going to try and they one of the leaders in block shots. So that's the way they play anyway. But especially against Louisville, they're really trying to go to overplay everything. And this one of two things you have to do. They did one for a stretch against Kentucky. They got it inside to Enoch late, and then Enoch plays one-on-one. He put him on an island, and he's in there by himself, and he's able to turn and score. And he did because they're still overplaying so many people on the perimeter. That's an area they've got to get better. That's something they just got to get better at. That's not something that's just a tactical point of view. They've got to get better at that. He's got to be able to get the ball against no matter who's defending him, denying him. And he let the Florida State big men kept them from throwing it in there. And there were times I'd look and say, take one dribble, you can get it in there. Take a dribble and change your angle, you can get it in there. And they didn't. They got to get better at that. The other thing, though, he said was, well, we knew they were going to overplay everything, which they did. And so we thought the best way, and I get this because, again, if you go back in history, my brother's team had great success against Duke, struggled against Carolina. Duke struggled against State and had good success against Carolina. And Carolina has struggled against Duke and had success against NC State. And it was because of styles of play. Mike at that time was playing like he is now again this year. He didn't play this way for the last couple of years, but he's back to it this year. Overplay everything, hard on the wing. And what Jimmy did is he didn't try and run anything. They just basically put it in guys' hands, told him to go to the basket. And they did, and they, you know, he had athletes that were as good as Duke's athletes, and they got to the basket and scored. He had guys that could turn the corner and get downhill. Louisville doesn't really have a lot of guys like that. And so what Chris said was, okay, well, we're not going to let you play to your strength defensively. We're going to just try and put it to the floor and go to the basket. But my argument or my concern is you're conceding to them that you're going to play away from your strength. In other words, your strength was this year. I watched them. I've gone to practice. They've committed to ball movement, player movement, motion, pass, cut, screen, boop, bop, boop. Okay, well, now you've just announced, all right, fine, you're so good defensively, we're not going to play to our strength. I think I still would love to see them do more without the ball, run some wrinkles, run some sets where you get into your motion out of some looks that the defense hasn't seen, which gives them just a half a count of uncertainty. Why? We haven't seen this set. What are they doing? And then break to your spots, and then you can still run what you're running. I know what Chris would say. Okay, great. So we made the entry pass. Great. But now what? Now we're still back to square one. They're still going to overplay everything. Okay. It's legitimate. But I think it's a problem when you just concede that we're going to play away from our strengths. But what he did is he said, well, I'm going to try and make it that we always have a guy who can get to the basket and create. And he had Darius start with Fresh, and then he had David play with Ryan. David can get to the basket, and he's the biggest of the guards, and certainly Fresh can pick his spots, but it's Darius who can get to the basket. So he's always got a threat of somebody who can get it in the paint. So that was a way to do it. In the first half, they got decent shots. They still didn't shoot a great percentage, but they got decent shots. So you can't argue that, but I'd love to see them be able to play to their strengths. I really still think when their ball gets moved, that's when they're at their best. That's an observation, just an opinion. Doesn't mean, oh, he's terrible, you got somebody else in there. No, those things, just an observation. That's the beauty of sport. In fact, I once taught a class in how do you define sport, which was fascinating. It really was. That was one of the chapters, sociology of sport. I mean, like chess, is it a sport? I would contend by the definition in this class that it's not, because it had some really specific definitions. Not just about you got to break a sweat, or you've got to be, you know, there's got to be an element of danger to it. Like trapeze in the circus is tremendously athletic and tremendously skilled. It's not a sport, though, but it, you know, it certainly is athletic. But what it is it's got to be a certain element of a physical skill. Chess, he said, other than being able to move the piece without knocking all the other pieces on the board over, there's no real physical skill to it. But one of it's a physical skill, a repeatable skill, a generally accepted series of rules. It's not like playing stickball in the neighborhood where one block to another block has different sets of rules. The rules are generally agreed upon. It's got to have some sort of a overseeing body that has credibility within the community. And then it also has to be really something that allows people, it has definitive strategies that allow people to be able to discuss it afterwards, that we want to discuss it afterwards, the strategy. Why did he do this? Why didn't he do that? You know, it's one of the reasons, I don't know, cornhole, is it a sport? Maybe, I don't know, it's hard to say, but because there's not that many strategies that you can discuss. I mean, I know for people who are really good at it, there are some, why did he try this shot? He could have tried to, you know, slam dunk it rather than slide it on the board, but it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to, it's a physical skill. And it's certainly, you know, there are defined organization that runs it. You know, again, I don't know. I'm not here to debate that it should be, it shouldn't be. I'm just telling you that that's one of the aspects of sport, is the ability that there are strategies, accepted strategies, and the debate about which of the strategies might be better than the other. And so that's part of it. So that's just what this. So I'm not suggesting everything he does, it's got to be like, you know, totalitarian state, we've got to suddenly salute and say, yes, you know, everything he did was perfect. But it also is ridiculous to have a discussion about the honeymoon being over and all that stuff. What are you trying to tell me here?
Joel Justice was only coming up, and doesn't look like Cal's coming up at all.
Yeah, that's what I thought when you said that. I thought it was just going to be when if he sends up one of his staff members, it means
one of his cronies.
He ain't showing.
Yeah.
It means the dude ain't showing.
So, yeah.
All right. Well,
balls in your court, though.
Let's take a break, and then Chris will come up a little bit later. I'll try and respond. We get a lot of texts, as you can guess, and we'll talk some more. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. It's the V Show. The big hitter producer's out today. He's a little under the weather, so hopefully he gets better soon. And Produce is putting in a monster shift today. What are you producing? 2, 5, 8 straight hours?
I'm doing 6 hours of radio, and I got here at 5, so I'll be leaving.
Well, not
leaving.
Six straight. You did Drew, which is...
I did Drew, which
that's
is...
3.
7, that's 3, and then I'm doing you.
Lock?
No, Crean did Lock.
Oh, Crean did Lock.
Crean's doing Lock in the Take, and I'm doing Drew and you, so...
Okay, all right, good. So you're not here for... Because I'll be honest with you, once you get past, like, 5 hours producing, it's impossible to care.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. You'll be playing a farm report, and I didn't give a damn.
Oh, I'm sure I will be. All right. That's all right.
We'll come back. Stick around. ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the V Show podcast. Listen to Bob Valvano weekdays noon to 3 only on ESPN 680 and online at ESPNLouisville.com.
You're locked on the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
A lot of texts, good ones, bad ones, and those in the middle. We'll try and get to as many of them as we can. I'll start with this only because I think that there's some merit to this. People like to criticize things they don't completely understand. And I'll be the first to tell you, I never played the pack line as a player. I never coached it. I've learned about it out of necessity because Tony Bennett's team became so prominent and they were playing it all the time. And now Chris is teaching it, and I've gone to his practice, and I've watched him try and teach it. And so, you can mock me. I was not a great player, or I'm not going to the Hall of Fame as a coach, but I've been around the game for a long damn time. I think I have a pretty good understanding of it. And so if I'm still learning about it, I don't expect that listeners who have not gone to clinics or gone to camps or any of those things would understand it completely. So I'll try and oversimplify it for you. It's a man-to-man defense. Years ago, they used to play a sloughing man-to-man defense, which was just a way of emphasizing your players, you know, try and stay tight rather than extend on players. But the pack line has a couple of other principles. And if you go to their practice, you'll see the court has tape on it. And what the pack line is that, and I'll tell you why they do it, and then you can say what you want about it, okay? You play man-to-man. But the biggest difference between regular man-to-man defense and pack line defense is how the guys away from the ball are playing it. Most of the guys off the ball in man-to-man defense have a couple of principles that they follow. In other words, you are trying to – there used to be a line, a school of thought that said you would overplay a pass from the guard to the wing. Overplay, I trust you know what that means. That's the guy who's guarding the potential receiver, has a hand up. He's got a hand in the passing lane, thumb down. You know, he's denying that pass, trying to keep the guy from getting it. And then you deny that pass to the wing. And there were some principles that man-to-man that would say you're going to deny any pass that advances the ball. So if you had the ball at the guard spot and you were trying to throw it to the wing, he would overplay the wing. You would deny that pass. But you would allow lateral passes. So you'd allow the pass to go guard to guard. Because the principle was you're not going to get hurt anytime a team is playing laterally. Okay, so that's one school of thought. Then there's another school of thought, which is you actually spend as much, if not more, this is a Bob Huggins school of thought, pressuring the ball back to the other side of the floor. In other words, the guard to guard pass. You deny that. Because the principle of Bob Huggins' approach is he wants to make the court smaller and smaller for you. So if you bring the ball up the right side of the floor, okay, he's going to try and deny you from throwing the ball back to the left guard, even though it's a lateral pass. He doesn't want the ball going to the other side of the floor because now he only wants to defend you on one half of the floor. And then if you throw it, advance it towards the corner, he doesn't allow the pass back out, which many coaches, think that's the one that really is not going to hurt you at all. You're throwing the ball backwards, not even going laterally, it's going backwards. But Hug's theory is, nope, now we got you in a corner, we're going to make it even smaller and smaller. We're going to cut the court, in the half court, the timeline automatically cuts it that way. Then we're going to cut the court, you know, lengthwise. You go to the right side, now we're going to cut it lengthwise. Then you throw it to the corner, we're going to take that quarter of the court that we've got, and we're going to cut that in half again, and we're going to keep you over. That's a pressure defense with the main principle there is not to allow ball reversal. The other principle is not to allow passes to be advanced. You're going to try and – that's the first man-to-man principle I talked about. In the pack line, they don't care about either of those passes. The only passes and passes that they care about are getting the ball within 16 feet of the basket. They put a box, an imaginary box, 16 feet from the basket, and all the defenders are trying to keep you from getting the ball there. And Chris goes one better. He draws a rectangular box, I don't know, about 5 feet around the basket. I don't know the dimension. You can see it before practice every day. It's taped there. And that is like the mortal sin. You know, the Catholic Church, venial sin and mortal sin. That's the mortal sin. Can't catch it there at all, ever. So that's what it's all about. And the principle is you're not going to get easy shots in close range. We're going to give up no layups. And then the other principle of it is every time a guy catches a pass, because those people are all defending that imaginary 16-foot box and they're supposed to have their hands up, and if you watch, they all do a pretty good job of that, it's a visual. It's if you catch the ball and look at the basket from where you're standing to the goal, for a split second, you should always see three defenders. As soon as you catch the pass, you should look, it should be three defenders. The guy that you caught it, the guy that was defending you, the receiver, the guy who caught it, and then a help defender on either side. They're in that 16-foot box, too. So you think to yourself, well, hell, there's nowhere for me to go. And a lot of times they don't even try and drive the ball. And so, you know, the ball gets, again, reversed around the perimeter. And then their principle is, at the time, they're going to give you a challenged perimeter shot. That's all they're going to give you. Eventually, when the shot clock runs down and you go, they are not going to go for a ball fake. They spend an amazing amount of time. They do as good a job as any team I've seen in the country of not flying at ball fakes. They don't foul jump shooters very often. Darius still does on occasion. He has a hard time breaking that habit. But by and large, you do chop-chop with your feet, with your hand up on the point of the ball, and you don't go for the shot fake. You stay down, and everything is about staying in position. So what you don't get is you don't get a lot of traps. In fact, they don't do any trapping. You don't get a lot of turnovers by shooting the gap and playing passing lanes. Some people don't like that. I mean, Hubie Brown has said for years that all things equal, the team that gets the most easy baskets wins the game. And so you get some easy baskets when you trap and get steals. But they think they'll get turnovers, and they do. Teams get impatient. They try and drive it into traffic, into that 16-foot box. You see them turn it over there. They try and throw it to a guy inside that 16-foot box. They're getting frustrated playing perimeter, lateral pass. They try and force it in there, and you get a steal, and then you can go. And the other thing is what they would say is, well, we don't think all things are going to be equal. If we play this defense properly, we're going to hold you to under 40% shooting. We're going to shoot up around 50%, and so it's not equal. So they don't. It's not like they don't care about turnovers, but in that run where Louisville was really good early in the year, they actually still made more turnovers than their opponents. That's what the pack line is predicated on. Do you not want to play it? If you coach the team, fine. When you get a team, don't play it. But that's what they do. And it's not. Oh, by the way, here's another thing. It's like if I say, what does he run? He runs a pick and roll. You know, okay, well, how do you run the pick and roll? There's like 20 different ways to run it. It's the same thing with this. You can play the pack line a whole crap ton of different ways. Virginia, for example, whenever the ball goes into the post, doubles it with two bigs. They run hard at the two bigs, and they trap it. Louisville doesn't do that. They don't like to double at all. I think he's very concerned that if you double, you're going to be susceptible to open three-point shots. And right now, the three-point shot is the greatest weapon in basketball, NBA or college. And so they're really trying very hard not to give you that. So that's again. But that's, and if you watch Virginia, Louisville will do it also. But Virginia, at least, I haven't seen them in person yet this year. But they are as good as anybody when a point guard comes off a screen by the five man, the five hard hedges, it's called. He jumps out, and he's not switching, but he stops the point guard from advancing when he comes off the screen. He really jumps out there, and they get really physical with that, and they try and ride the guy all the way back to, like, midcourt, and then they let him go, and the point guard who was the initial defender recovers, gets back on him, and the five man races back to get his man, who in all likelihood has rolled to the basket. You say, why don't they just throw it to him? Well, because, again, the way the pack line works, where are the other three players? They've all got 1 foot inside that imaginary 16-foot square, so as that guy rolls to the basket, they just cheat in for another couple of steps, and there's no room to throw it to him. Sometimes there is room to throw it to him, and Louisville's given up some layups on that, but it's not as easy to do as you think it is. So that's the principle, way oversimplified, of the pack line defense. The discussion about the team, this guy says, let's see here. This is what I disagree with, so I told that. No one locally gives a rip about the national view of the program. Let me stop right there. I don't care whether you care about it. I care about offering support for my point of view. If not, then we're just throwing empty opinions at each other. And what I was saying is this thought that somehow there's credibility to, oh, the honeymoon's over, what kind of job he's doing. All right, well, let's talk to people who know the game. And you can say, well, I don't care about their opinion. But if I'm going to give you as evidence why I think that there's no merit to that, I have to give you some support for that. And the support is not one, not two, as LeBron would say, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six. Everybody I speak with has nothing but glowing things to say about the job he's doing. This is what they do for a living. So I think it counts. So you don't have to give a rip about it. You don't have to care about whatever you want to, but it's relevant. Close up, things are not looking good right now. No, you know why things are not looking good right now? I guarantee 90% of the people who are sending me texts that are along that vein, there aren't many, but there are some, are because they lost to Kentucky. And I think back to Mark Gottfried when he was working for us at ESPN before he got back into coaching. We're sitting in the studio. We were breaking down a buzzer shot at the end of the game, doing all that stuff that analysts do. You know, look at this. Here's what I noticed. The guy came off the screen. Here's what I noticed. They overhelped on this, and I noticed this. And they got to him, and he said, here's what I was thinking. He said, as that ball was in the air, I was thinking one thing. Good coach, bad coach. Good coach, bad coach. Good coach, bad coach. Because if that ball goes in, then everybody says, oh, that guy's coaching his ass off. And if it misses, oh, you know what he's doing. And that's the truth. And that's what the Kentucky game does. And it's when sports makes you stupid, and I lament that. Because the fact is, it's a tie. They played them even. Overtime games are a toss of the coin. They got to overtime at Rupp on the road. They didn't play that well, and they still managed to get the game to overtime. And Florida State is really good. You don't have to like the fact they're good. I'm just telling you, they're very, very good. The Sagarins had them right with Louisville. It was a toss-up game in the Sagarins. KenPom liked Louisville a lot more than Sagarin. But Sagarin had it. It was basically a two-point game. And, you know, anything that's a one-possession game is a toss-up. So they're good. They're long. They're athletic. He's coached. He's found a way that he wants to coach Leonard. They're hard to prepare for because that perfect example of Vassell, who's their big go-to guy. Louisville does a pretty good job defending him, and Walker goes out of his mind. And they played well, and they shot the ball way beyond their normal ability. Walker's had 10 threes the whole year. He made 5 this game. Now, if you want to say, well, Louisville's defense wasn't very good, I think Chris would agree with you. They were not as good as they needed to be. But you also got to say they just played their butts off. A good team played very, very well. And it's 2 losses, for God's sake. I mean, please. It's very, very strange that a community that is so knowledgeable about basketball would react so illogically. I get it. Somebody said, well, fans are short for fanatics. I get it. But so be fanatical. Be ridiculously heartbroken that they lost to Kentucky. Go outside and take the axe and go chop wood until you get all your frustration out. Fine. But if you're going to portend to be an analyst, then deal with reality. And the analysis is flawed. Not because I'm just telling you as an observer, as now I'm doing the basketball analyst thing. Those things, do they have some things to cure? They absolutely do. And I already told you that if you're just joining us, the progression of a season, they came out and played differently than they did last year. Early in the year, teams are relying on last year's film a lot because they don't have a lot of data to go on yet. And Louisville had changed completely the way they played. They were running stuff teams hadn't seen. Chris was calling sets that they weren't prepared for, and boom, they were on fire. And now teams are adjusting. And frankly, Texas Tech showed a little something, said, listen, we're going to really, you're going to beat us. You know, a lot of teams, times when you come in highly ranked, teams are afraid to get that aggressive because they think if they do, you're going to exploit them. And so Texas Tech called their bluff, basically, and said, here we come, deal with us. And Louisville didn't deal with it very well. All right? Well, so now other teams are saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get in everybody's jock. At Florida State, it's not much of an adjustment because that's how they play anyway. Now, what kind of counters are you going to make? Chris is trying to make some. Change the starting lineup, not because the starting lineup, which to fans is the be-all and end-all, but so he changed the combination of guys he played. He has a driver in Darius with that one unit when he plays with Fresh, and Fresh picking his spots can drive a little bit as well. And then David is going to be a good player, and they're just going to have to force feed him. He's still not ready. I mean, I watched a couple of the passes he threw the other day. He tried to throw like a 40-foot lob into the post. There's no way he's going to throw that pass. It's an inexperienced player's pass. So that's what happens. But you're just going to have to gulp, you know, take that with a grain of salt and go on because they're going to need him to play. But he can get to the rim. He can get it to the basket. He can go by guys, and they're going to have to utilize his skill set. So he did that. And he didn't like the fact they were playing so slow, especially against Florida State. They've got to run better and more. And so he tried to get back to that. Now let's see what kind of adjustments they make. Now, I don't know, when they got to number one, did you think they were going to sail to the Final Four and be undefeated? I'm not sure what. They lost a couple of games. They lost to a good team on the road in overtime. A team that loses out of conference at home, you know, like once a year, maybe. Not even that. I know it's Kentucky, though, and oh, my God, I got to listen to Ted at the water cooler for another year. Well, that's the way the world works. You know, tell Ted to go suck a lemon. I mean, it is what it is. They game went to overtime, and they scored more points in the overtime. It was a tie, basically. And Florida State, who's very good, came in here and played very, very well. Their first loss at home. And so they are now a heartbreaking 2-1 in the conference. Chicken Little, sky is falling. And you're looking around the league. Are you looking around the league? I mean, Syracuse has really got a very tiny margin of error. North Carolina just lost at home to Georgia Tech. Well, they got Cole Anthony. Well, whatever. I'm just telling you. That's the reality of it. You know, I don't know. They are. I look at the ACC, and if you don't look at it as a big picture, again, you can do whatever you want. I'm just giving you why I do what I do and some supporting data for that. It's a league where everybody's going to lose. College basketball, everybody's going to lose. College football has ruined the way people watch sports in college because everybody equates it to college football. You got 2 teams playing for the national championship or undefeated. That ain't happening in basketball now or maybe ever again. The margin of separation is too small. They play too many games. It ain't going to happen. You know, it's why it was Cal's dream. He's always talking about, the year we get to 40-0. You can do it, more power to you, but it's, you know, it's probably not going to happen in our lifetime, I don't think. I don't know. When they start changing NCAA regulations, maybe things will change again. But right now, it isn't going to happen. Everybody loses. And sometimes you lose a couple in a row. That's the way it works. But in the ACC, again, quoting my brother, they used to only play 14 league games. He used to say, in a league like the ACC, it's 7-7 and go to heaven. Because if you go 7-7, it meant you were going to win 20 games based on who you were playing out of conference. And in all likelihood, you're going to the NCAA tournament, and that was the be-all and end-all. Get in, give yourself a chance. Okay, you say, well, that doesn't seem like very lofty goals. Yeah, it does when you're in a league like the ACC, because if you get in, you can win the whole damn thing. Now, I do think things have changed. The ACC back then, everybody made the tournament, and nobody got a bye. Now, not only do you get a bye, you get two byes. So the big picture for the ACC is, can you get in the top four? Okay, I look at this league and I say to myself, given everything I've seen, is Louisville in Chris Mack's second year coming in, taking over a program that was in a bit of shambles, no disrespect to David, who I thought did everything he could to keep the thing on the rails, and I give him a lot of credit for having done that. The fact of the matter is, it was a program that was in a lot closer to being in shambles than being superstars, and they're in a situation right now where if you look at this league in his second year, who's got a better chance of being a double bye team than Louisville does? Duke is 3-0, UVA's 3-0, Florida State, by the way, 3-1. So that's who they lost to, a team that's in that elite class, and then there's Louisville. You know who's next? Boston College. Boston College has 2 wins and Georgia Tech has 2 wins. Nobody else has 2 wins in the league. You like your chances? Notre Dame just won at Syracuse. They've got 1 win. Carolina's got 1 win. Syracuse has 1. Everybody else has 1 win in the league. They've all got 1 win. Boston College, Georgia Tech, and Louisville have 2, and those other 3 teams have 3. You want to be in that top 4 to get a double bye. You think they got a chance? I think they got a chance. I think they got a good chance. Am I sure they're going to do it? I don't know. Maybe we'll be talking in a month, and boy, oh boy, what happened to this team? They fell apart. Okay, it's possible. But to start talking about that now, wow. Do I dare say it again? You're that guy who's taking the damn cake out of the oven 8 minutes into the recipe. Why isn't this a good cake yet? Because it says bake it for 35 minutes. That's why. No real mystery to that. So it's the same thing here. Let the thing play. If they could beat Miami at home, who they've already beaten once on the road, they'll be 3-1, a 3-1 start in the ACC. To get a double bye in his second year of a program that he took over when it was in shambles, that's a pretty good job. That's the objective observation about it. If you don't like what he's doing, your business. But I'm just telling you, it's really difficult to think there's a lot of credence to that discussion, both objectively and from most of the fan base, because the texts I get are, yeah, I hope they get it right. I'm sorry they lost to Kentucky, but this guy's a good coach. He's doing a good job. He's an elite coach, blah, blah, blah. So, yes, I tend to think there's a lot more meat on the bone with that take than the other one. I don't know. Chris is not going to talk right away. They're going to bring a player out, I'm sure. But we'll be ready for it. So we'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. Thanks for being with us, ESPN 680-1057.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.